How many of you on guard duty last night? Okay, you can go to sleep as long as you don't snore. How's that? Just before we do, I'll read one passage here from the Old Testament. A couple of things that I'd like to call your attention to. Now, when we're finished here, in just a little while, over in the school area, which is also the kitchen area, those women have worked. They started working yesterday morning. Well, they started really Thursday when they went into Louisville to get the supplies for the food. Ma Bird, you'll see her. She's the white-headed lady over there. We just call her Ma. She just has that good image about her. They peeled just something under 200 pounds of potatoes by hand yesterday. You're not getting this stuff out of a bag that was frozen at Sears and Roebuck 100 years ago. You're getting the real stuff over there today. And they've really worked hard. Those stoves over there, I'll tell you, they'll drive you up the wall. They'll cook a while and won't cook a while, heat. And so they've really worked hard. And you men, you who would be comfortable with it afterwards, I'm sure that Mrs. Parker and Mrs. Harp and Mulbird and all the others over there, the servers, maybe just a hug. If you'd feel comfortable, you're going to see Mom and Grandmom image over there, maybe sister image, and they've really worked hard to dish up. Now, Sergeant B, you can't pay any attention to him. This guy here, he's still nuts. You can't pay any attention to him at all. And he's joked with you about the food, that's fine, but it's really great. Now, he did steal some of it before things started here. I've already been told that. Military intelligence tipped me off on what's going on with him. Tom told me is what he was, yeah. And for my little part, look, I'll tell you, we're so glad you're here. I think joy sparks. Now, Joy, I've noticed something wherever you went to. When you start talking, nobody can see you. I see these soldiers looking all around. Now, she's hidden behind that piano up there, where she really is. Some of you finally figured that out. But Joy said it so well. There's no need. I wouldn't be so stupid as to trying to add to her words. And then what she sang from her heart is from all of ours. I know that some of you men are saved. You know what that term means. I don't mean how Hollywood distorts it and ridicules it in their typical arrogance against God and Christ and the good things. But there are some of you men sitting here, and you know. Some of you, when Amazing Grace was sung, it coughed a lot of memories up out of the old file down in the basement when you heard that. And then whoever it was that led in prayer, whoever, I don't know, he's talked to God before. But there are some of you, and now look, we're not here to talk about religion. I'm not interested in religion. Personally, I believe one of the curses of America is religion without Christ. Without Christ. It's to have enough religion to make you mean as hell or the devil, and you've never been changed on the inside. Now, we don't have that here. If that's all they had, I wouldn't have left the mission field and come back here to give a few years. But the Australians have a little term. Some of you probably heard it. In my years, I learned to use it. The Aussies have a little term. It's called fair dinkum. And when an Aussie says something's fair dinkum or dinkum die, they mean it's 100%. And so what I want to talk to you about now is fair dinkum. It's dinkum die. And I want to ask you to give me one thing. That's all. I want you to hear me through. We don't push anything down anybody's throat. That doesn't work anyhow, like some of this TV junk. We don't do that. Salvation is a gift, and the gift can either be accepted or rejected. And so in what I want to speak to you about here, and it's not one of these two-hour sermons, climbing the wall, swinging on the chandelier. I'm not interested in that. I spent too many years in Africa for that. But it's really dinkum die. And the text that I'm interested in is one that some of you know. You might not know where it is, and that's not really necessary, but you know it's in the Bible. In fact, it's in the Bible twice. It's in Psalm chapter 14 and verse 1, and it's also in Psalm chapter 53 and verse 1. And here's what the text says. Now, the fellow who wrote this was a military man. His name was David. He had a military career that would make Schwarzkopf turn green with envy. That would make MacArthur step out, or Patton. David was a military man. He was a fighter. And thus it was necessary often to kill. Often necessary. And we hear this garbage, well, you can't be a soldier and believe in God, you've got to kill. I'm not talking about killing deliberately and purposely like a lot of hunters here in Kentucky. They'll shoot a deer down and let it rot. They like to see something die. Those people are sick. If you're here, you're sick. I'm not talking about that. But here's what a military man said who had quite an army career. And if you'll read about his soldiers, one of the men looked like an animal. He was a vicious man, yet the commander had to be tougher than all of them. Can a military man believe in God? All right, let's see. David, you speak to us. Psalm 14:1 and Psalm 53:1, same thing. Here's what the military, greatest military man in wonderful Jewish history, here's what he said. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. I want to talk to you men about why I believe in God, or if you'd like to reverse this around, why I'm not an atheist. Either way you want to look at it, that's the way we want to handle it. Maybe we should start with why I'm not an atheist. In Austin, Texas, there's an organization called the American Association for the Advancement of Atheism. About 5 years ago, when we came in from Australia for a while, I purposely subscribed to their official magazine. That's a quote. They named the thing the American Atheist. So I sent the 20-something bucks in for a year's subscription because I wanted to read right out of the horse's mouth. I didn't want somebody to tell me they think they believe or somebody said they believe. I went to them, subscribed to the American Atheist, and received it for about 11 months was all I could swallow of the American Atheist. Now, the reason I got the magazine of America's leading atheist organization is because I wanted to see what was the basis of their atheism, on what they built this argument, you're naive to believe in God. So I went right to them to find out. Well, after about 10 or 11 months, I'd had enough of it. And I sent the last magazine back. Incidentally, I sent either two or three letters back asking for the remainder of my money to be returned. One thing I did pick up, they don't return your money down there, whatever else they do. And so I learned one thing from that gang, that they'll take your money, but they won't give it back. I wouldn't say that's a trait of all atheists. But as I went through their material, and I tell you, I'm an avid reader. I want you to know I scrutinized this like it was under an atomic microscope. And what I was looking for is I read article, Henry Jackson's article, Madeline Murray O'Hare and whoever else she slept with, all of her articles. I read them all because I wanted to find out what was the basis, not the periphery, what was the very fountainhead from which this stuff flowed. We're naive to do that. You're stupid to be here this morning. On the battlefield, this won't help you. Kill, 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 die like a dog, rot. Maggots eat your life's over. As I went through this material, incidentally, I bought a number of their books. I still have several of Henry Jackson's books. He died a few years ago. He knows different now, but too late for Henry. It's a one-way trip. And as I went through the publications, I saw something. Saw a lot of things, but Jeff, there was one thing that kept coming out of their publications. And here's what it was. I've written it down here. Their notion, their belief, and some of yours, that there is no God, this sort of philosophy or belief originates in here. That's the origin of it. It doesn't originate because some atheistic professor in this professor of sociology or anthropology, and he's up pointing this out and this out and taking pot shots at the Bible and blaspheming God and blaspheming the church and blaspheming the Jesus Christ, and because he's old and white-headed, he must speak with experience. I mean, there's no fool like an old fool, fellas. Some of you know that already as young as you are. And the thing that I saw, that this idea that there's no God, it starts in all their hearts. That's the reason David said twice in the Bible, the fool has said, where, David? In his heart, there is no God. You see, fellas, there's not an atheist who can look out at the mountains and say, you see those mountains? There's no God. There's not an atheist who can look at spring with life coming back and say, you see that? That proves there's no God. There's not an atheist who can examine spring or summer or the death of winter or the cold of fall. There's not an atheist who can see a cow calf or see a lily push its way through the sod. There's not an atheist who can do that and say, now look, everybody, that proves there's no God. He can't handle that one. There's not an atheist who ever lived who'd look at the stars in Australia. In our many years, one of the first things the Australians said, Mr. Pike, we want to show you the Southern Cross, the constellation of the Southern Cross. It can only be seen from the Australian end of the line. And there's not an atheist who ever lived who can look up at night and look up at day and say, you see all that wonder? Hey, man, there's no God. You see, his idea that there's no God didn't start out there, starts in here. And some of you, there's no God, and every other word is Jesus Christ this, on American television. You know what the three popular words are today? Look, I was a former radio announcer. That's what I was doing when God called me, straightened my life out like this man up here and called me into the ministry. And of course, back in my days, television FCC was a good organization. And we go overseas and come back and go overseas and come back after 35 years. And we had, what, 4 furloughs in 35 years. That was by choice, incidentally, not by compulsion. And every time we'd come back, I'd notice on television it was always hell this, hell that, damn this, damn that. And then a little bit later, oh God, hell damn, oh God, hell damn. Those are the three words. Why those words? Why those words? What's the origin of, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, are to hell with you, damn you. What's the origin of those? Why those three words? I'll tell you why. Because wrapped in those three words hangs eternity for all of us. Heaven, hell, God. Man says there's no God. Starts in here. I met a fantastic Romanian Jew by the name of Reinhold Wumbrandt, Richard Wumbrandt, means worm on fire, which is a great friend of mine. He's an old man dying now. And I remember Wumbrandt was brought up in Romania first. He was under the Nazis. He had the Yellow Star. 4 of his children were murdered. He had the stigma of being a Jew, stigma from the devil's point of view. And I'll always remember that he said when he was a lad about 16 years old that life was so hard that he was scraping a garbage can trying to wash maggots. You know, maggots get fat. Trying to wash maggots off and eat them. And he said he concluded there was no God. You see, the hardship outside drove him to this conclusion inside. Later on, when the Nazis got through with him, and then when they left, here comes the communists, the Soviet troops. 3 million occupation soldiers in Romania until it was hell with the gates open. And you know what that same man told me? He said, as he surveyed life and surveyed his friends and considered hardness, he said, God, if you don't exist, you should. We need you. You know, some of you men, somewhere down the road, if you continue in the army and human society stays in the circus arena like it's in, do you know there's a 99% chance that some of you men are going to end your life on a battlefield? You ever thought about that? Oh, you can God this and you go to hell now and damn you now all you want to. But I want to tell you something, soldier. The possibility is looming high you're going to end your life on a battlefield amid the dead and the dying. You're going to roll over to your mate and say, damn you then, aren't you? You're going to shake your fist and say, God, I know you don't exist. You're not real, so get lost. Wouldn't it be a great day, wouldn't it be a great thing if some of you men laid down this pseudo-macho image? You're a macho man. And looked at it like it is. And realize you're not as hot as you think you are. There is a God. There is a devil. There is a hell to shun. And I've seen too many people die. And a heaven to gain. And come on, man, crawl down. And come to Jesus Christ and let Him save your soul and make you new on the inside so He can act new on the outside. Then you'll be the kind of man you should be. The general. General, what do you think about God? Only the fool says there's none. You're the general. That's my conclusion. You see, David wrote both Psalm 14 and Psalm 53 long after his military career was finished. He was an old man. You'd say retired. He was looking back. He wasn't a 16-year-old kid at the start of the road who knew more than God or anybody. It was all over and he looked back. He said, I tell you one thing, soldiers, you don't believe in God. You're such a fool, you need a place in Guinness Book of World Records. I want to tell you something, fellas. Listen to this. Not to believe in God makes a man less than he should be and keeps a man from becoming what he could be. Not to believe in God. Now, in the text that I've read you, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. I want to wound it all up for you now. I told you I wanted to talk to you about why I'm not an atheist or why I believe in God. Either way you want to run at it, run on. There are three reasons why I believe in God. Three. First of all, I believe in God because of creation. Now, I'm a country boy. I grew up in Tennessee like a weed. I mean like a weed. Some of you understand that talk. Let go mostly to myself, finding my own way, discovering life, discovering my body, discovering how life works. That's how I grew up. I had no soft hand to guide, like a weed, like you, most of you, like a weed. And despite all that, when I was out at night possum hunting to get some pelts, to have some money to buy Christmas presents, when I was out at night possum hunting, I'd stop infrequently and look up, and my dad would go with me sometime my older brother, and he'd like to get me lost and go off and leave me. Older brother. And I would look up time by time, and I didn't know anything. Look, I didn't hardly know my name, but I'd look up and I'd say, wow. Whew. I don't know who made all this, but what a job. What a job. And then in the daytime, in the cold, when we had no wood cut or it was frozen, we had, and the old wood stove sitting in the living room, that's all the heat. One time I saw it 18 below zero one time with a big thick coat of ice on the window there, melting, run down on the old linoleum on the floor and down through the cracks where the linoleum was broken.
And I'll tell you, listen, whether a man stands and gazes across the night or looks at the wonders of the day, listen, soldier, how on earth, if you've got a brain a half inch long and if you can think 2 feet ahead, how can you look at these things and say, oh, they just happen to be? Now, creation shouts, hey, who made me? Who made me? Many years ago in Australia, my wife and I back there, we worked in the Great Northern Territory. It's still a territory. It's not even a state. You're talking about bush. You're talking about outback black stump. That's Aussie. Boy, they're tough out in that Alice Springs. We were in Alice Springs. And I made friendship with a meteorologist, a Dr. Smith. Made friendship with him. Met him somewhere, I don't remember, but had access to his home. And after several times in and out of his home, Dr. Smith said, what do you keep coming here for, Reverend? I said, Dr. Smith, I'm interested in your soul, and I want to try and introduce to you the Lord Jesus Christ. And he was very courteous. He wasn't sarcastic like a young UPS man at my front door yesterday. Very sarcastic. He wasn't like that. He was very courteous. He was an academic man. He had some discipline. Boy, that's good when you get saved. It makes you a super-duper Christian. And here's what he said. He said, Mr. Pike, he said, I look at you and I think that you Christians are the most naive people in the world to believe this Jesus Christ God myth. He said it very courteously. Well. And I said, now Lord, how am I going to answer this man? And so here's the answer the Lord gave me. I said, Dr. Smith, yes, I plead guilty to being naive if I am that by believing in a supreme being who in the Holy Trinity created all things. I'm guilty. I plead guilty to being naive, ignorant, stupid, unlearned, or whatever. If the charges are on the basis that I believe 2,000 years ago a virgin gave birth to the sinless Son of God, who at the end of 33 and a half years as the sinless man was nailed on the cross and God took all my sins and laid them on him and killed him for my sins so I wouldn't have to be killed for them and could go to heaven. He said, I plead guilty to that. But I said, let's consider your viewpoint. I'm naive because I believe that. Now, you have to be very courteous. I say, now, you're not naive because you believe that billions and billions and billions of years ago there happened to be some water. Nobody knows where it came from. And it got warmed, and nobody knows how it got warmed. And as this water begins, some of you suckers believe this garbage. And as this water began to wash back and forth in the basin of a distant sea, then this chemical by chance hit this chemical, and this chemical met this chemical, and this chemical met this chemical, and then bloop, bop, poo, we had the first amoeba, the first cell of life. Now, I'm naive, and he's not. And you believe that as the water warmed that cell of life, it began to break open in this line of evolution, and this line of evolution, and this line of evolution. And here we are after all these millions of years. Now, I'm naive for believing a supreme God said, in the beginning, God created. I'm a fool for that, but you're not a fool for believing this stuff. I can tell you one better than that. I spent 17 years in Africa. I went up into what used to be Rhodesia before it was given by our government and several other governments to the communists. I went up into Rhodesia. And I lectured in a university there. And in the question time, a professor stood very courteous and challenged me. He said, one of the basis of my believing in evolution is the giraffe, or they say giraffe. I said, the giraffe? I said, excuse me, whoever he was, explain that. He said, well, he said, when the giraffe first evolved, he had a short neck. Now, put your seatbelts on, fella. You might want to put your helmets on and get your grenades out. When the giraffe first evolved, he had a short neck. Now, you're intelligent, brother. You can get a Ph.D. That's probably a post-hole digger, but you can get a Ph.D. if you believe this. And so he had a little neck. And over the millions of years, a drought came. He couldn't get the leaves, so he stretched his neck and got a leaf, and stretched his little neck and got a leaf, and stretched his neck. And after a million years or so, he had a long neck, and he never did unstretch. Now, I'm naive. You say, that's been fun. Look, man, that's landed. Look, that was right there, two blocks down from Prime Minister in Smith's office, where I was lecturing. Look, fellas. There is a God because creation says so. Now, when I look at the wonders of creation, it doesn't tell me all about God. It's like footprints. I crossed the Great French River down Tennessee. Well, you cross it 100 times, seemed like, in Tennessee. And I was driving through. I could look and I could see footprints all along the sand. I could see deer prints and looked like raccoon tracks all along the sand as I passed the river. Now, I saw the tracks that an animal had been there, but I didn't see the animal. He'd left his prints. You see this light? Now, this light, somebody made it because it's here. I don't know who made it. I don't know where he's from, what religion he is. I don't know anything. But somebody made. You see these fixtures? You see this pulpit? You see that musical instrument? All around me stands material manifestations that somebody had to make this stuff. It didn't make itself. These instruments didn't get together. These chords didn't. Why, that's stupid. Somebody made it. And when I look at creation, as a boy, I said, somebody made all this. I don't know who did it, but they sure did a good job. I'm convinced there is a God because somebody made it. Creation. Now, you know the second reason I believe in God and not an atheist? First is creation. I can see God's fingerprints all over the place. Footprints. Ooh. The second reason I know there's a God is revelation. Revelation. Now, creation says, look at the fingerprints, look at the fingerprints, look at that. A sailor out in the midst of the ocean can take out his sextant and can set that thing up and find his direction anywhere. Don't tell me that a monkey came out of the ocean and broke his tail off when he fell out of a tree and invented this. It's poppycock. You're a fool to believe it. Don't tell me the magnetic poles, the way this thing runs, the systems, it's on time. The sun comes up on time. She goes down on time. The tide is on time. Men set their watches by it, and we're expected to believe it just happened out there. Brother, they're the naive ones, not us. Now, I can't really find God in creation. I know he's around somewhere. And so God said, I know you can't, so therefore I'm going to give you the Bible. And God said, in my Bible, which is Revelation, says you're going to discover me, who I am, what I've said about you, what's wrong with you, what you need, why you're in the mess you're in. God said, you'll never know why you're in the mess you're in by looking at the moon. That's a big footprint, but you really won't know. And so God said, after creation, said, okay, guys, here's a revelation. That's the reason on both sides of these benches, this church rakes and scrapes and we milk the cow dry to buy Bibles and get Bibles and give you a Bible free if you want it. Not a rigged Bible, not even any footnotes. Just a Bible. So you can have in your hand and open this book up and say, now who made all these things? Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created. Whew. God. Revelation tells us what creation doesn't tell us. Creation says it's made. Revelation says God made it. God made it. The beauty of Revelation, it tells us what's wrong with all of us. You know, soldier, it tells you what's wrong with you. Oh, it's a struggle to come on. It's a struggle to come on down on the floor, isn't it? It's a struggle to face, you know, you lost in the crap game, 7-Eleven Beach. It's a struggle, isn't it, guys? But I want to tell you what, now's the time to do it. Don't wait until you're out there on a battlefield with a leg blown off. You're captured in some prison or war camp, and they give you hell. These Eastern nations, if you think they have mercy on you, you don't know what you're talking about. I've been through them. We have a woman in this church who stood in a certain country and saw them take men and women and boys and girls out at a certain day on Saturday and chop this hand off and chop this foot off and chop this finger off and then wrap them up with tar and send them home. And they're supposed to be civilized. The answer you need is found right here. If you want to know about God and be introduced to God and find what God says, right there it is. 31,175 chapters and 66 books. The beautiful Jewish Old Testament of 39 books and what's called the Christian New Testament with his 27 books, there's where you will find God. You can't bow before the moon and say, "The moon, I know God made you. Don't know anything about moon. Save me." Oh, no, fellows. Everybody knows it. The American Wrestling Association holds it up now, Goldberg 316. You see, they got to bar it. Man has to refer back to something authoritative. John 3:16, "For God so loved the world." I'm glad somebody loved us. Supreme, I mean. What did he do? That he gave his only begotten Son. That whosoever believeth in him, whosoever. There are men from 38 different countries here and 38 different states and 4 foreign countries. I counted them sitting back there on that back seat. Some of you men have never heard a straight gospel message in your life. There are some people in this world that have just enough religion to make them mean and miserable as hell itself. That's not the way the loving, sovereign God and His Son Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit work. I want to tell you, there's hope for every man. Some of you men fled to the army because you couldn't make it or you're in trouble. No doubt in a crowd, 150-something men here. Some of you couldn't make it at home. Some of you got things in your life. If you ever discovered, you'll be in Leavenworth prison for it. And you know it. And this is where God steps in. Revelation. He's loved us. Revelation. This book says that He so loved me that He gave Christ. What did He give Christ for? Why give His Son? You see, I'm in sin. You're in sin. Now, there's a few folks that think they're not. But you know, they don't go all the way to the top story with their elevator. I mean, normal people. The big problem is sin. You know why Sergeant B. Eden's back there took that first drink of liquor flying to Japan or wherever? You know why he took it? Sin made him do it. You know why some of you raped that girl or got that woman pregnant or run off and left this one? Sin did it. That's what did it. You go to the psychiatrist, and he'll say, "Well, you got a sublimal hang-up. You got a complex from your great-grandfather." And I'm not saying some of these things don't exist, but I'm going to tell you what. Every hang-up I've ever had, every complex I've ever had, started because I was mean. And I was born mean and had meanness in me, and I wanted meanness. And I pursued it and found it. Until 18 years old, standing up here with steel braces on both legs, God said, "That's enough. Stop." And on a football field in Donelson, Tennessee, knocked unconscious, never to walk again. And that's been 50 years ago. I'm going to tell you what. I'd rather strap this steel on these legs and hobble through my house and hang onto the walls. I'd rather do that. I'd rather be a miserable cripple and live like that than go where some of you are going with two good legs. You've already made your mind up. Chaplain Brokaus is not going to tell you anything. Henry Pike's not going to tell you anything. You're going to make your own way. Oh, soldier, there's a third reason you can believe in God. First, creation. Second, revelation. But oh, my. The third reason you can know there is a God and experience this God is a good old word mentioned 800 times in the Bible called salvation. Salvation. I didn't say Sal Jackson. I said salvation. Time magazine had a big article some years ago when we were overseas about salvation and born again. My son, when he was in here from South Africa, left me a Time magazine that wrote an article on Moses. I've never read such garbage in my life. Such junk. Moses was a nitwit that didn't know what he was doing. He was a jerk. He should have been locked up in a psycho ward. That's it. Now, see, this is the world's opinion. This is the opinion some of you were brought up in. All Christians, all preachers are like these jerks portrayed on television. We're out for the money. We preach 15 minutes and take the offering home in a Wells Fargo armored car. Let me tell you, I know there's a lot of them that do that. I'm not denying that. I want to tell you, one of the biggest disgraces in any society is when a minister who's supposed to be living humble and right disgraces and goes into sin and runs off or is caught, got somebody else's wife pregnant. That's a disgrace. But I'm going to tell you, hey, fella, they're not all like that. Oh, boy. You may be stupid enough to say, "Well, that's all how they are." I want to tell you, listen, I've lived longer than most of you have. And I want to tell you, they're not all like that. I've seen men live for God. I saw Africans in Rhodesia with their head cut off, a pregnant woman ripped open with a communist bayonet because she was a Christian. The The preacher that's sleeping with another man's wife would never have his head cut off. Don't come around this junk. Well, this and well, that minister and well, this preacher and well, this deacon. Don't worry about them. They're all going to hell when they live like that. You don't want to go there. You've got more sense than them. You need Christ. I want to close. Creation says there's God. Revelation says, hello, here I am. Read me. And as I read that, I see where this God makes a requirement. He sent his Son, Jesus Christ, into this world. In Matthew 11, 28, Christ says, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. In John 6, 37, the Lord Jesus Christ says, if you come to me, I will not cast you out. You say, oh, preacher, you don't know what I've done. God does. He's the one you're coming. This idea, you've got to get your life all straightened up and get real clean and take a squeaky clean bath, and then God might consider receiving you, is rubbish. Jesus Christ said, I have come to seek and to save that which is lost. Christ said, I came to call sinners. I'm so glad that Christ saves sinners. Man, if he didn't save sinners, son, I wouldn't make it. And that's the kind that he came to save. Salvation. With this, I'm finished. 2,000 years ago, God in physical form stepped into human history from the womb of a virgin. And a miraculous babe was laid on ox fodder in a cow barn in Bethlehem. While the makers of religion slept and dreamed of their coming Messiah, he was nursing the bosom of a virgin. 20 miles down the road. Him ready to, at the end of 33 and a half years or thereabout, he stood at the end, he was God in the flesh. He stood at the end of life as the only man who had never committed one sin.